For September the 4th, 2015, we talk about Nintendo mending fences with Amazon, Pac-Man 256, and we ask you which series have kept it fresh. Welcome to the 119th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Jala Prendes.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Ben was not able to join us. However, Jala, you were so gracious as to step in and fill in the gap, which our fans are going to love. Thank you, Jala.
Hooray! Parade wave.
is that where you just kind of go like side to side, like you're sticking your hand out the window?
Of yeah.
A car? Yeah. Okay, there we go. I just wanted to get the right image for that. Oh, yeah. Does anybody have any anecdotes over the past like a week or so?
Crickets chirp.
Crickets chirp. I really don't.
Okay. Yeah, that assumes I have a life. And...
you know, aside from your job and your wife and your kid.
Oh, yeah, those are all right, I guess.
Look at me. I'm dead. You just get going home to your palace. Yeah. No. You have a lovely family. No, I've got.
I'm going to.
Sorry, just the way you said that.
Well, I'm going to be going to an Adam Warrock concert, which, if you don't know who he is, he does rap music that is based on games and such like. And he's going to be playing here in Houston, actually at a. I have some friends who run a comic store that also have a large event space and have all different kinds of events there, including like little markets and concerts and stuff. So he's going to actually be there. So I'm going to be doing that on the 18th. So it's not quite yet, but I just got my ticket more recently.
Nice. I've got so the Eagles of Death Metal are playing at a venue that is like a 5-minute walk from my house. At the 20th Century Theater here in Oakley. And so I'm really excited about that. The problem is they're playing on a Tuesday night, which means I probably won't be on that episode.
What is that again? Because it might not be a problem.
What's that?
What date is that?
That is the 22nd.
Ah, yes. Then it is not a problem. I will be on vacation. Mm. So we'll just have a very natural...
A natural lull in the conversation. Yeah. Okay, cool. Huh. Let's see here.
Now, if anyone wants to rob that nice house we were just talking about, they know exactly when to come.
And mine. And mine, too. You just have to triangulate how many places are within 5 minutes walk of that theater. That theater, which is like the number one, like the prime candidate for DuckCon, actually, if we would ever do it.
So cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So just, to find Cole's house, just walk around until you find yourself in a Disney movie.
Yeah. I was walking out to my car today and I saw 12 baby lizards running along my driveway with a mama lizard at the front of them.
Oh, goodness.
Because I want to be you.
And also, I had to give over my tomato plant to the squirrels because I was going out there and I was like, huh, like all the like there were more ripe tomatoes here last time I watered this. And then I noticed that all along the railing of my deck were these was tomato skins. I'm like, damn it, you were going to be a salad.
On the tomato note, my sister has a garden up in Pennsylvania, and she had cherry tomatoes, but those plants overgrew everything else in the garden and then went over like the fencing area and took over the walkway. So they had to tear them out because they were Attack of the Killer tomatoes and were totally like all over the place. So it killed killed off the carrots and all the other stuff, like the peppers and everything else.
Oh, well, yeah, no, most of my food plants have died, so that is fine. The snap peas are gone. So network news and stuff like that. Let me think here. The first episode of the first premium episode of Abject Suffering went out. That is codenamed Exquisite Suffering, and that is about the Last Action Hero. The
movie?
No, the Genesis and NES and Game Gear games based on the movie.
Because the movie was great.
Yeah, I was going to say it was blotted out from everybody's memory.
Yeah, no, we talk about how good the movie looks. It's been literally 21 years since I've seen it. But yeah, so go check that out. That is a part of the Patreon thing, along with the Slack, which, you know, that has been good, and we've talked enough about that. Do you guys want to start the main body of the show?
Go!
Let's jump in.
Let's do it. So we've got the usual three this time, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, starting out naturally with
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. This is the news segment, and I would like you, Jala, to go first.
Sure. Well, you guys may or may not have ever heard the urban legend about Atari buying or burying crappy games due to poor sales, such as the notorious E.T. video game.
We spoke about it at length.
Yeah, well, so that was actually true. Last year, they had dug up 881 games 200 miles south of Albuquerque, New Mexico.
They dug too deep.
they dig dug too deep.
Yeah.
Catalogfish.
Well, even though it was already found last year and there was a documentary recorded about it and everything, they've been kind of selling off all those games to collectors, including museums and things like that, with the highest price being paid of $1,535 for, yes, E.T. Mm. And so other titles that were found in that heap were Asteroids, Missile Command, Warlords, Defender, Star Raiders, Sword Quest, Phoenix, Centipede, and Super Breakout.
Which one of the Sword Quests? Was it Earthworld or Waterworld or Fireworld? I need to know.
Well, you'll just have to, like, go find, you know, that place in the desert and start digging, Cole. Maybe you'll find some more, because I don't know. But they were sold to various people in 14 different countries. Really, it's just a matter of totaling up that all of these things together, now that I think they're all done selling them, totaled over $100,000. So that was a good find for whoever dug that up.
Do we know where the proceeds are going? Like, is this... Because that was a big effort, right? Like, that was, like, a bunch of people were involved in that.
Wasn't that kickstarted?
It was a documentary, I know. Like, that...
Yeah. Yeah, I know it was a documentary. I have no idea where the money went to. If it was just, hey, we're all going to split the funds, or if it actually got donated, I have no clue.
Yeah.
So.
Huh.
But that was just a neato thing, and just, like, the fact that that's how much they paid for the, you know, for the highest-selling game, and... You know, this is what was actually in there, because I had heard about it, but I didn't know all the details. So I had just seen something about that. That's it.
Nice. I'm going to do mine real quick because it's going to be quite brief. So Capcom has announced in the lead up to the Tokyo Game Show that there will be a Western release for Ace Attorney 6. These are the Phoenix Wright games. The series has kind of, ever since like the first three, been really just kind of on the bubble for Western releases. They only released Dual Destinies in digital form on the 3DS, just because they were not sure it was going to sell. And apparently it sold well enough to make this new in a reality, although it is still uncertain whether we're going to get the weird versions that have come out recently, such as the one that is set like in medieval Japan as like, you know, here is the attorney that that Phoenix Wright is descended from. And it's literally like set in medieval Japan. I'd be curious about that because, you know, I want to see different cultures and stuff. That's pretty cool.
But at least according to legend, like, samurai had the right to just chop peasant people in half.
Yeah, so, and that trial would be really short. It's going to be a super short game, David. It's going to be pretty fun to watch.
Objection! Decapitate it.
Yeah. It'd basically be Phoenix Wright meets Teen Girl Squad. And then there's also there, it's like Phoenix Wright versus Sherlock Holmes. Which, you know, might be kind of fun. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've got Phoenix Wright versus Professor Lawton or Layton.
Yeah. I talked about that towards the beginning of the year, and that was good.
Yeah. So I can't go wrong with Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if we're ever going to get those. We're going to hear more about this at TGS, which I'm excited about TGS because, God damn it, they better talk about the Bloodborne expansion. Otherwise, Bonfireside Chat is fucked. Yeah. But yeah, that's me. David, how about you?
Sure. Actually this Mine's gonna kind of mutate here in a bit, but apparently you can now buy Nintendo games, digital Nintendo games through Amazon.
Yeah.
So I just think that's kind of cool.
Are you buying like a code or what?
Yeah, effectively you are.
Yep.
Okay.
But it's the same way if you were going to buy like a PSN game over Amazon.
Right.
Over Amazon, if you didn't want to give any of these kind of console holders your credit card information, you could just buy the codes with your Amazon account and then enter that in manually.
Yeah, if for some reason you trust, you know, Nintendo or Sony or whatever, less than a company that, you know, is known for just being kind of psychopathic to its employees.
Yeah, you know.
But anyways, so yeah, I do think there is like some, you know, like tie-in type thing where, you know, it assists you in inputting the codes to your account or something like that, but it's mainly you're buying a code.
Yeah.
Which I, to a certain degree, I don't quite get why this is like a new thing, because what stopped Amazon in the past from purchasing a bunch of codes and selling them to people?
I mean, Amazon, I presume that Amazon wanted to stay on the good side of Nintendo.
Well,
and vice versa, right?
Well, and then that's the
and also you can't just buy codes from Nintendo. Usually their eShops, you know, in the past have been you just buy this and it's directly associated with your account. You can't really do any gifting because Nintendo does not internet.
Oh, okay, good point. Yeah. you know, it's a fad.
like electric guitar.
Yes, like electric guitar. No, but you say that, but then the story this mutated to is this article I was reading then linked to a admittedly Kotaku article that apparently since 2012 you haven't been able to buy Nintendo consoles on Amazon.
Really?
Like you could buy them through third party sellers from Amazon, but you Amazon themselves did not sell Nintendo consoles.
Huh.
And it seems like no one's ever really said why.
You know what? Now that makes a lot of sense, because I had an awful lot of trouble getting my getting my 3DS, like my new 3DS, because my first, you know, my first resort is usually Amazon, because fuck going to a store. but yeah, that was tough. I thought that was just because of supply constraint. I remember being able to like get my Wii U through Prime, although I was impatient, so I just went to Target and paid the tax.
Right. Well, for one thing, you now have to pay the tax anyways.
Well, yeah, because of Ohio, which is it's not bullshit. I should just be okay with paying my tax. However,
that's bullshit.
that does change the calculus of what I go to Amazon for.
Yeah. Although this is now the podcast about Amazon. I'm kind of okay with it, because it used to be that if you wanted 2-day shipping, you know, that was free with Prime. But if you want 1-day shipping, it's full price. Whereas now, if you want 1-day shipping, you pay, but it's subsidized.
I thought it was always like $4 for like 1-day shipping, which I was usually fine paying.
But... Oh, is that... See, anytime I looked, it was always more. But I recently decided to order a steel bar on Amazon because...
Oh, yeah, you were talking about this.
Yeah, because... What the hell?
Yeah. Well, like after you said that, I was like, well, you know, I don't really want to go to a Dick's because, you know, it's again, fuck going to a store, but I want some barbells. I'm like, okay, I want to get like 225-pound, you know, just kind of like you do some curls with these or like rows or whatever, right? And I was like, that cannot possibly getting 50 pounds worth of stuff shipped. Nope, it's on Prime.
Yeah, no, that's honestly, I don't quite understand how they do it, because specifically that thing, like getting weight equipment and stuff, like I've done that through Amazon. It's like the shipping you just had me not pay is what, nearly half of my Prime membership?
Mm-hmm. No, like you can get like TVs and stuff on Prime. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think
this episode is brought to you by. I should actually put, because you can do like Prime bounties through the affiliate stuff. I should probably put that link on there. Sure. Continue.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, what I tend to, what I figure it must be is, like, supposedly, health clubs, you know, gyms and stuff, the way most of them make money is on the fact that lots of people buy health memberships because they, you know, like the idea of getting healthy, but virtually no one actually uses them.
Oh, yeah. Like, so the lazy people are subsidizing the people who overuse it.
Right. So I wonder if it's something like that, where it's like the people who buy it get Prime and, you know, just watch the movies or, you know, just like order some random stuff are kind of subsidizing.
Yeah. Yeah. The shipping of the many outweighs the shipping of the few. Exactly. Quite literally. Yeah. So this comes like hot on the heels of Nintendo opening up for the Humble Nindy bundle, right? So that must have been their kind of like big foray into offering codes for stuff on their stores.
I also saw there's a Humble Tom Clancy bundle, which I just love the title of.
I mean, it's just Humble Tom Clancy bundle.
Yeah, like one, I just find that funny, and two, like I love Tom Clancy. I don't at all mean to speak poorly of him, but. Like, he wasn't really a humble dude.
Yeah, I mean, humility is not putting your name on everything. Oh, this is weird. This is the first Humble sale that I've seen where, like, it's redeemed through Uplay.
Ooh,
so that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I know, right? So I'm looking at this, and I'm like, you know what? Chaos Theory is a good enough game that I would want to own it, and I don't know if this is worth it to me.
Sure.
Huh. Yeah. Dennis, how about you? What's your story?
Yeah, so there's a glitch that someone found in Grand Theft Auto 5 that essentially strips all of the textures and detail out of the world, leaving what really, really looks like a PS1 or PS2 era game, like late PS1, early PS2.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely hilarious to see, you know, this kind of textures that I haven't even thought about game worlds looking like this for so long, suddenly back into the limelight.
You need to play more retro games.
I know. Well,
right.
It's kind of funny because the main thought I had when watching the video of this is like, honestly, like if I played a game that looked like this on PlayStation 1, I'd be like, oh my God, everything is so realistic. Like, you can see windows on the buildings and you know that sort of stuff. Like it kind of reminds you of the bar, or how much the bar has been raised over the years for realism in games, and it's kind of a, you know, it's a fun aesthetic, and I know that, you know, a lot of games ape the whole 16-bit or 8-bit aesthetic. I wonder how long it'll be until games are intentionally going back to like this retro PS1 PS2 look.
It's kind of already happening. Like the whole let's do flat shaded, like garage shading on low poly models. Like that's mostly what Kentucky Route Zero, Route Zero.
Okay,
is,
I was about to say, I pulled up these images and they all just look like Kentucky Route Zero.
Yeah.
I literally, that was going to be my comment as soon as you had finished.
But like the Magic Circle is another kind of like first person exploration game that kind of does that. Like here is a game that was like started development in the late 90s and kind of continued, and you're seeing stuff that is in like this developer art kind of phase. That's coming back into fashion, especially as like, you know, Unity, from what I understand, I may be telling tales out of school here, and I fully recognize that, is better suited to doing 3D world kind of stuff than like 2D things. And as that kind of takes over as like the lingua franca, we're gonna see more of like this, you know, intentionally going lo-fi, which I'm not against, you know, like if you can take this and get rid of like the draw-in pop-in problems and like crisp things up, I'm cool with like big broad fields of color. What I don't like is the weird limitations of the PlayStation 1 and N64, where like the flat plane in front of you just undulates because they can't actually like everything they were doing was a hack.
Yeah, yeah. I also think it's, you know, it's just like, you know, modern pixel art games, even ones that are meant to you know, imitate a certain look, almost never like actually do, you know, actually look like real old pixel art games because, mm-hmm. you know, they put in improvements and modernizations and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Although and Shovel Knight is an exception to that rule, right? They did it so that it could...
Actually... Like...
They fudged it. The one game that I can think of, and I've talked shit about this game before, but not about the way it looks, Retro City Rampage, that was specifically designed as a, you know, like this could have been rendered on the hardware that we're aiming for. There are like concessions and like Shovel Knight doesn't have the flicker when there are like a bunch of sprites on screen. And also there are more like audio channels and stuff.
Got it. Okay.
To your point, David, like, those games that are trying to ape that are trying to display the game as you remember it, not as it was.
Right. It kind of reminds me of the SCA, you know, it's what, the medieval times as they should have been. I feel like that's kind of here where, like, I feel like that'll be the thing, is that there'll have to be this sort of era as it should have been, especially since... There's a certain degree to which I feel like that, okay, I'm going to talk about like good and bad art, and like obviously that's innately subjective, but I feel like there's a certain degree to which like the pixel art thing is in some ways kind of more innately artistic than some of the just like, let's do 3D stuff, but just we had to use crappy computers, if that makes sense.
That's more intentional, right?
Yeah, like that's more what I mean. That's a better way to say that.
Yeah.
Sure. I'd be interested to see, like, as these different retro styles come into vogue, how much of a lag we're on in terms of, like, you've got your current cutting edge style and then the in vogue retro style.
It's always 20 years.
20 years? 20 years?
It's always 20 years.
Yeah.
So I wonder how that would compare to, say, like, when it, like, retro setting, say like sitcoms and stuff like that.
It's always 20 years. That 70s show was in the late 90s, and that was about the late 70s. It's always 20 years.
Was Fair there enough. Ever a that 80s show? Or...
Yes, that was in the early 2000s.
Okay. didn't just
I'm not fucking
that.
Kidding you. Like it
no,
is.
No, I follow.
It's not that I don't believe you. It's that I'm a little shocked how the degree to which you have these facts on lockdown.
Have you met me?
So that's the subtitle. That's the endorsement. That's the jacket endorsement for Cole's biography.
David, we grew up together. Like we snuckleheads from old times, dog. Like, have you met me?
Granted. Okay.
Okay.
Well, it's one of those things when, you know, when I'm around Cole, I'm often shocked, but I'm never surprised.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question, kind listeners, and you so kindly respond. Dennis, what is the question that we ask the nice people?
Yeah, this question actually comes from Phil Holmes, so thank you, Phil. And he asked, what video game series does the best job of staying fresh and different even after several iterations?
So yeah, this is a good question. This was inspired by the recent, and by recent I mean today, release of Metal Gear Solid 5, which is running on the TV in the room behind me. So understand that my presence is an act of love.
I admire your willpower.
You should just speak like Snake for the rest of the episode, just in honor of your of what is waiting for you when you are done.
You know, my Snake voice takes it out of me, actually.
Aww,
and I'm already feeling pretty. I'm already feeling pretty gruff today. So,
well, you can be Sugarbone. You can be Sugarbone. That's fine.
I suppose. No. Also, I don't. I haven't listened to enough of Kiefer Sutherland's Big Boss to know his most of my Snake is David Hayter's.
Yeah.
So you got to
definitely not.
You're outdated.
No. We'll see though. We'll see.
Wait. David Hayter is Napoleon Dynamite, right?
No, that's John Hayter.
John Hader. Got it. Okay.
Although that's now a thing in my brain.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. You have just wrecked that, though. Oh my god.
Yeah. No, there was a girl I was dating in high school who, like, we went to see Napoleon Dynamite. That's like my sophomore year or something like that. And we were talking afterward, and, you know, it was like her favorite movie. She'd seen it like 3 or 4 times, and then she let slip that I reminded her of Napoleon Dynamite, and that was just too much for me.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, nice knowing you.
Later. You're very attractive, but that's like, if that thought's in your head, I don't know what to do. Oh, well. So, yes, I will pick us up as soon as I get back to the tab here with Christopher Schley, who writes, Fallout! It was pretty loud there. The series spans various styles too, from isometric RPG to tactics game, and the 3D ones, which even involved two different developers. They're all great. I don't know if you've played Brotherhood of Steel.
Is that the tactics one?
No, tactics. That one's pretty well regarded.
Oh, Brotherhood Final of Fantasy Tactics. Gotcha.
No,
yeah. Wow. Excuse me. Ooh, that's
similar. No, I also haven't put in a lot of time with tactics, but Brotherhood of Steel is like the Baldur's Gate style, specifically console Baldur's Gate, Diablo like that. That is not very well regarded. Yeah, Fallout's pretty good. Let's see here, David. What does Steven say?
Steven says, it's difficult to not be lazy and just choose Metal Gear. So that's what I'll do.
Attaboy.
I completely approve. The arc of that sentence entertains me. Every game since Solid 1 has evolved the formula in some way. 2 let you hold up guards for the first time and added collectibles in the form of dog tags. 3 introduced the depth healing and camo systems, as well as a completely different environment working. 4 up the ante by making a stealth, or not so stealth, our way through war zones as a third party to the battles. And Peace Walker let us build up our mother base by gathering resources and troops. And now Phantom Pain is set in an open world and seems to be delivering on the idea of building an army for a cause that Dragon Age Inquisition only touched. Obviously, these are only a few of the changes between games, and the differences, to me, allow each entry to retain its value in the series.
Yeah. That, like, it's also helped that each of those was kind of on a different system, aside from 2 and 3, but those were so far apart in the lifespan of the PS2 that, like, it actually could be considered a different system based on people's knowledge of how to use it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. See, for me, I unfortunately can't say too much because I love Metal Gear, but I have not played 4. I have it sitting there, and I'm waiting to play it. It's in the queue, and obviously, I have not played Peace Walker either. So, that being the case, I can't really talk about that. But at the same time, by default, I don't have an answer to this question, so this would be about as close as I would say, because I have faith that these games, let's put it that way, I have faith that they are good, even though I haven't played all of them yet.
Yeah. Nice. Just because of how relevant they've remained to the conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's do that.
And then I think Ollie had a reply to this post, and we'll hear from Ollie in a second with his main answer, but I just wanted to bring it up because I thought it was really good, in which he kind of talked about how the Metal Gear series is controlled by Kojima, and it's basically it's the same vision for each game, just better executed. So the evolution is basically the game becoming a truer version of itself each time, versus, you know, just arbitrarily changing up the formula, which I think I really liked that take on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Fantastic. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Franz say?
Yeah. Franz says the system or BioShock series. From sci-fi RPG to survival horror to underwater shooter to underwater escort quest to story-based roller coaster simulator in the sky. Every game in the series was different from the previous ones, and everyone was great.
Yeah.
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 I would agree, although the only one of those that I haven't played is System Shock 1, so I'm going to take your word on that, Franz.
Yeah, and was System Shock in a first-person perspective?
Yes, System Shock and System Shock 2.
Yeah, so I think this stands as a nice complement to Fallout, which is spanned radically different genres. Mm-hmm. The BioShock or System Shock series has kind of all been in that first-person shooter, but has varied wildly within that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Ollie writes in saying, I will rather aptly change to my second choice as Steven stole my first. Steven saying Metal Gear. My second choice is, of course, Thief. I picked up Thief the Dark Project on a whim about 6 months after it came out. I loved it. It was a real sneak 'em up. When Metal Age, which is Thief 2, came out, it was a first day purchase for me, and I thought it was going to be awesome. And I hated it. The tweaks to gameplay and the shadow system, the new noise-carrying mechanic, etc., were hard to get accustomed to. But I played some more, and I became used to these new additions and changes. And I began to love it. It eventually became one of my favorite games in any genre. Fast forward a few years to Deadly Shadows. The gameplay changed again, and gone was the mission-based structure to be replaced with the open world of its day, the hub world. This was a thriving place and invigorated the already great gameplay. I loved it like a brother. Then the series kind of died out. There was talk of a recent reboot, but that never happened. You hear me? It never happened. La 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 la. I can't hear you. I editorialized that last part.
Well, see, I would totally agree with that, and except for the reboot, which, you know, of course, we're talking about this thing that didn't happen. So, yeah.
Does it seem to me like a number of a number of series that used to be very innovative have kind of died out recently?
Yeah, I think that, I don't know. Like, what do you define as recently?
Since, say, like mid-last console generation?
I would say so, probably. I mean, like, a lot of Japanese developers didn't really get up to speed with their shits.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think there's also a very natural culling process that happens every time you jump console generations, mm-hmm. in that some of the mainstays from last generation kind of show up immediately on the new generation are just not very good at all. Mm-hmm. And kind of that spells out death for them.
Yeah.
I guess maybe to me, I don't at all mean this as like a filthy casual type thing, but it seems to me like as video games become kind of mainstream and companies have figured out sort of how to make generically, like basically good games, it seems like some of the series
how dare they no, I'm sorry, I interrupted you like a jerk, go ahead.
Oh no, so it seems like some developers or teams, whoever, have kind of fallen into the things of kind of just making generically good games.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, the Call of Duty series or anything by Ubisoft.
Mm-hmm. Which I think makes this question very apropos.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I'm just saying, like, it seems like, like the Call of Duty series, was kind of a cool, did some cool things until it became popular enough that it could just be the same thing forever.
I mean, are you just talking about some kind of, like, regression to competence?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, there's a place for that. Sometimes I just want a solid shooter.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a little bit of what I'm going to talk about in the grind today. So,
David, what's Robin say?
Sure. Robin Young says, from a gameplay perspective, the Final Fantasy series has done a fantastic job of trying something new with each iteration, even with direct sequels to the mainline entries. As much as I'm a sucker for Final Fantasy nostalgia, big fan of Theater Rhythm and FF Record Keeper, I'm still looking forward to the direction they go with new titles and characters.
You know, that's honestly going to be my answer.
Really?
Yeah, because I can't in good faith say that Silent Hill does that. And so
I was wondering.
Yeah.
I was sitting there thinking about it, and I'm like, I wonder if Cole's going to say Silent Hill.
Yeah, I, you know, it is. Shattered Memories just can't carry all of it. And if PT came out, like, or whatever PT was going to turn into, Silent Hills, I guess, came out, maybe that discussion could have been reopened. But, you know, in the absence of Silent Hill and Resident Evil, you know, being able mm-hmm. to, you know, fill that spot, I would say, like, honestly, you know, it's been about a decade since I played a Final Fantasy, like a new Final Fantasy game I enjoyed, but like 12 did enough to like carry that through for me. And I can recognize the good things about 13, as we talked about last week.
And again, like this will be apparently the episode of me prefacing. I don't at all mean this to be like the thing I don't like, therefore bad. But to me, like when I think of Final Fantasy, I kind of think of this, you know, new grind, same as the old grind. Like I was actually kind of thinking of it as one that seems like it's just now more the same, which I mean, I'm not a fan of this series. So I guess what I'm saying is tell me why I'm misinformed.
It's, I think that maybe I'm going to say outdated. I think that your opinion is based on like the Final Fantasy Final Fantasy. I've got that on the mind, the PlayStation era, where like, from 7 to 9, they played kind of the same. However, from 10 on, they kind of played around with the base assumptions about the series while still kind of keeping some of the trappings.
Sure. Okay. That's cool. That's very cool.
Yep. Let's see here. Jala, what does Phil say?
Phil says, aside from the obvious Metal Gear Solid, I think that Nintendo has done wonderful things with the Mario series. With each new console, they change the mechanics just enough to be challenging while familiar, and are often some of the best games of their time.
I can't argue with that.
Yeah, I mean, we've already talked about how much we like Metal Gear, and it's running behind me, so I want you guys to know, just it's an act of love that I am here.
I might have heard this before.
Dennis, what does Sean say?
Sean, you missed one. To
David. Oh, did I? Oh, David. Dennis, what does David say?
David, you knew what you did. Time for No, David says Elder Scrolls has done a good job in constantly expanding in scope and content while staying true to its roots and still feeling like an Elder Scrolls game. Bonus props to Skyrim for scrapping the old horrible stat leveling system.
See,
yes.
I kind of agree and kind of don't. Like, Skyrim for me, content-wise, got less interesting, although the gameplay mechanics themselves were a lot more fun. I still kind of miss the unique atmosphere and everything of Morrowind. I still keep that very much in my heart. And like, Oblivion was pretty standard medieval fantasy looking, and then Skyrim is like, here's some Norse people, you know, like, you know, and just the little bit that I was in the beta for Elder Scrolls Online. Sorry, David, I do not like it. it's, you know, like I was not having too much fun with that. I mean, of course, that was in beta. They might have added stuff that makes it cooler now, but, you know, I was not really a big fan of that either. So will I play another Elder Scrolls game? Yeah, but, you know, I'm not looking to that to be as exciting as Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's
let me just pour some salt on the wound, Cole.
God, dude, it's behind me, and I want you guys to know that me even being here is an act of love.
Are you just like a town NPC? Am I standing too close to make you just trigger?
Yep.
Welcome to Canaria.
If you didn't do what I was going to. It's weird, right? Because each Elder Scrolls is so, I don't know, like the love and the vitriol, they seem equally strong kind of in both directions. And so it's weird because like, what do you consider like keeping it fresh and keeping it new? There are changes and there are churn while still keeping it recognizably part of the same series. But like that kind of just attrition makes it feel like each entry is a lateral move.
Yeah. And honestly, as much as I like Morrowind, I'm not one of those people who's such a fan that I'm like, there is nothing wrong with that game. No, there's stuff wrong. Like I can list off things I don't like about every single one of these two. So I think that's a really apt way to put it. Lateral move is pretty accurate.
I'd be interested to know how many people or like what percentage of people Morrowind is their favorite. Just because it does seem to me like Morrowind's the one that at least in terms of like world elements, story elements, like most bullseye, they're
you know, kind of the unique elements of their lore and story.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I kind of was thinking about that, and it's kind of like in the Castlevania series, the game that a lot of people love most is Symphony of the Night, which kind of revolutionized how the game played. And the same thing can be said of Morrowind in that particular series as well. Mm-hmm. You know, that Morrowind upgraded it severely from the game that came before it and kind of set the stage for what came after. So, you know, I even had a friend of mine at one point when Oblivion was the newest game saying that Morrowind was like the beta for Oblivion.
That's weird.
Yeah, he hated Morrowind. So, but yeah, so and also that same thing happened with Resident Evil. Like a lot of people jumped on board at Resident Evil 4 and then jumped off later on, but that's the game that they like best out of that series. So it might just be that kind of a thing that draws everybody to that particular game. In my case, it's just because it's so unique and freshly, you know, different than the other environments that I've played in the other Elder Scrolls games since.
Yeah. It's funny because like Skyrim is the most fun to play, whereas Morrowind is the best world to inhabit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Oblivion is unremarkable in almost every way.
Well, except some of those storyline quests in Oblivion were hilarious. Yeah, some of them were good.
The Dark Brotherhood, and I like the Thieves as well.
And even some of the random quests in town, some of those were actually pretty good. So there are some good things about that game.
Can't I just be glib without people scrutinizing everything I say?
No.
That sounds like a heap and helping of my problem.
Look, Cole, there's a very low threshold for internet famous, but once you cross that threshold, you have everything you say scrutinized.
Yep. People are going to pick it apart.
Oh, gosh. Dennis, what's Sean say?
Sean says, the Mario titles have always kept the same or a smaller formula.
Similar.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So have always kept the same or a similar formula while adding a small twist with each iteration, starting even as early as Super Mario Bros. 2 with the picking up of the enemies and plants, the overworld map on Super Mario Bros. 3, all the way up to the cat suit in the latest Wii U. What does the cat suit do?
Lets you climb on walls.
Oh, okay, cool. Wasn't that in Galaxy?
Can't you also go scratchy style on enemies?
Yeah, it gives you a melee attack.
Oh, I thought that was in Galaxy. Maybe I'm crazy. It's managed to have the same feel, but continued to add in just enough space to get you to come back and try the new thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. Like, the new Super Mario Brothers series is a little disappointing in that regard, but yeah, in general.
See, I would say my one, I agree with this definitely. My one disappointment though is it doesn't seem like they've retained kind of the classic Super Mario. You know, it doesn't seem like they make those anymore.
Super Mario Maker is coming out in a week.
I was waiting for it.
Good point.
Oh, and then it's just infinite Mario.
Oh, it's all the Mario you could ever want.
Like, what is this?
Mario's upon Mario's all the way down.
It's an embarrassment of Mario's.
Oh my god. So the sequel to Mario Maker is going to start like getting into the 3D world and galaxy shit. I could see someone like, just give me like the ability to like build planets and mess with those gravity.
Oh god. Dennis, I am rock hard.
Oh yeah, it's exciting times for Mario.
Anyway, Josh writes in saying Ultima was also pretty good about keeping the series fresh. Of course, they had the advantage of dramatic leaps in graphics and hardware between most games. That's a whole era, right? Like, are we considering games that just kind of petered out before the modern times?
I think so. I think we'll accept it.
Yeah.
See, my game will have petered out, so.
See, I love it for me, like, Ultima was completely gone, you know, completely lost its... This is too judgmental, but, like, kind of its relevance, so you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. By the time I even thought about starting playing video games.
Yeah.
So to me, like, The Ultima series is like this legendary series to me that like
is vaguely referenced and spoken of, but I don't know.
It's worth like getting the GOG copy of Ultima 4. I think it might be free, but you're right. Like by the time we came up, David, like Ultima had gone off to the pasture of Memorpga.
Right.
And yeah. Ultima yeah, Online yeah. was like the only way that that existed. So when I think of Ultima, it's usually, you know, Lord British being ganked by some trolls.
Right. And I don't mean that as a negative statement. If anything, I actually mean as a positive one. It's just funny to me that there's this like, it's like this Indiana Jones-esque where there's this entire past like thing that was really important to people that, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see here. David, what does Danny say?
It says, even though I'm horrible at it, I have to say I feel like StarCraft has kept itself pretty damn fresh, despite being an RTS. The series kept some of the same elements around, sure, but I'd say it's hardly samey between the two games and the expansions. The story, too, didn't really go how I expected it to go, and I'm really excited to see where Legacy of the Void takes the series, especially since Zeratul is the second best character, following Tychus Finlay.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to play the Heart of the Swarm or whatever that was. Like that I think, like, didn't that one focus more on like developing Kerrigan as like the hero character as opposed to the Wings of Liberty, which was more about like a bunch of different like mission scenario kind of things?
I don't know. I really suck kind of what he said. I suck at the game to the point of, you know, irrelevance at it. Mm-hmm. But I really love this story, so I don't know, but I haven't kept up with it.
Yeah, I loved Wings of Liberty, but never felt like spending the money on the Zerg one. I might just need to like sweep through the whole trilogy once it's complete. Let us see here. Jala, what does Sean say? And be sure to nail the laugh on this one.
Okay. I don't know. I'll try. Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, thank you.
No, that's a lie. A real answer would be Pokemon. Although many elements of the game have remained static, over the 20 years I have played the games, the new Pokemon, subtle changes in play, new settings have kept the series fresh enough for me to still enjoy the series after all these years.
Yeah.
So I want to rise to the fence of Assassin's Creed. Which is, those words just came out of my mouth because I haven't played a game since.
That's a weird valley to die in.
Yeah.
Here, let's fill it with water. No.
you realize it's been 10 years since you played a good Assassin's Creed, right? Or 5 years, rather.
Okay. Follow me here. The first one was like this amazing setting and concept with no game. Mm-hmm. The second one was, hey, they actually put a game in this amazing setting.
Assassin's Creed 2. Like I will. Yeah. I love Assassin's Creed 2.
And then the third one Brotherhood?
Brotherhood was the first spinoff of Assassin's Creed 2. Assassin's Creed 3 was the third one.
And Brotherhood was the first one to have multiplayer, right?
The first one with multiplayer and the first one with really good combat.
Yeah, and so that was a huge innovation that I absolutely loved. Mm-hmm. And the actual single player game doesn't stick with me at all. Then there was a bunch of generic garbage. But then number four had like pirate ships.
Yeah.
And are we on five yet? It's all kind of jumbled together.
I thought five was pirate ships.
Five would have been Unity.
Five would have been Unity. Okay.
I love it. The thing that has improved in the game is that it has pirate ships.
to be fair, pirate ships is kind of like the Trump card.
You know,
not the Donald Trump card.
But. Yeah, see, that's the thing. Now with him in politics, you say Trump card, and I just see his face and just hear things.
and then you just punch in a direction.
Right?
And now I need a new monitor.
Where's my drink?
Let's see here. We've hit our time, so Dennis, I'm going to have you conclude us with Sam.
Sam, okay, Sam Bear, who has been a huge contributor to the Guild Wars 2 guild, which we'll talk about in a second. So his name will probably come up again. But Sam says, I will buy a new Mario Kart every console generation until the day I die.
I just imagine like a dude with like a leather jacket, like Mario Kart to the grave.
Yes, indeed.
He also says, awesome.
Yeah. He also says that Metal Gear kept on getting better, and Fallout and Elder Scrolls are inconsistent, but generally always good if you avoid most of the spinoffs.
Hmm.
Good. Yeah, Mario Kart is one of those games where I think in my mind it's always stayed the same until I actually go in and play.
Mm-hmm.
A new version, like when we played it on the Wii U at your house, Cole, I was just like, my mind was blown. I was like, there's so much here that I just have not experienced before. So, you know, it was like that when I finally played the Wii version. So I feel like I always go into Mario Kart for some reason thinking it's going to be generic Mario Kart, and then always really pleasantly surprised with how much they mess with the formula.
See, I feel like some combination of Mario Kart and Pokemon almost seems like kind of like the Madden series for nerds. in as much as like, at least on paper, theoretically, it's like, I've already bought this like five times, but you've got to have it. I mean, there's no scenario where you're not going to have it.
Even a broken series is right two times a decade.
Yeah.
I'm going to patent that. Nobody say that anymore. So I've said mine, Final Fantasy. And Jala, you said yours, Metal Gear Solid. I'm going to be curious to hear what's yours, David?
This is actually kind of tough for me because I like actually, I kind of said earlier, I started playing video games seriously fairly late. So I basically missed all of like Super Nintendo, PlayStation 1 and 2, and it seems like a lot of the Solid series, those platforms are very central to them being Solid, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would say for like more of a in truly in the spirit of the question, I'd have to say like the Zelda series.
Sure.
I was just wondering if anybody, because none of the other commenters, people who responded to the question said Zelda, and I'm like, I wonder if anyone's going to say Zelda.
Yeah, so what I think's kind of unique about Zelda is that, you know, the games are very, very different, but they all feel like Zelda. And, like, especially, you know, especially considering, like, look at, like, how screwed up the timeline is. Like, you know, the fact that they can tell all these weird, contradictory stories and have it all be recognizably Zelda, both in terms of, you know, feeling and tone and storyline, stuff like that, I think is really saying something. And I do, and I kind of like the fact that at least until the current iteration of Game Boys, they kind of kept the old school Zelda games alive. So sure. I would say maybe a little, I did want to throw out two for maybe a little bit more controversial. I think Guild Wars between 1 and 2 deserves some credit. I feel like 2 points, it doesn't make a trend, but you know, it's still a pretty pretty dramatic jump in terms of keeping things interesting.
Yeah.
And then go on.
No,
sorry.
And then
the one that kind of got me thinking about the like games that used to be kind of somewhat innovative that have since just become merely competent, I feel like there was actually a lot of freshness between the first three Far Cry games in terms of, you know, the first one being, at least from what I've played, you know, almost in some ways kind of reminds me of Uncharted in terms of, like, some of its tone.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the second one just being, like, almost like a prototype for Spec Ops The Line in a lot of ways. That's...
Not exactly, but you know, really doubling down on like there will be no jokes in this game, and war will be awful.
Yeah.
And then you know the third one, you know, going for you know kind of doing the almost the Saints Row-esque type of approach, which unfortunately, well, fortunately because I like it, but unfortunately because innovation's usually good, they kind of seem like maybe they're going to be stuck on.
Hmm.
So yeah, that's kind of my thing.
Hmm. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, mine, I have to go with the Jack series, especially because they did this evolution of their games all through one console generation. And it was really cool to see that arc as they really mastered the hardware and got a hold of themselves and kind of found their voice. And Naughty Dog just does good shit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the first game was a very, very straightforward 3D platformer with, you know, a lot of style and things to like about it. And then the second game kind of veered wildly into this like Grand Theft Auto Lite almost world with a really heavy emphasis on platforming. And then the third one just hugely expanded the world and has made the best use of like kind of open wasteland that I've ever seen.
Hmm.
So I don't know if anyone else has played Jack 3.
No.
But the whole like desert area is just this huge, vast open expanse that the scale feels really well used. But then also there's lots to do in it, if that makes any sense. So it feels big and feels empty and feels like you can drive around, but at the same time it feels like there's interesting stuff to find. And that was just kind of layered on top of the Grand Theft Auto, which is layered on top of the really solid platforming, and it all just comes together really well. And again, they did it all in the arc of one console generation.
Hmm.
Maybe to add to that, and this is mainly coming from me observing you playing these when we were roommates, but it also seems like just an incredibly, incredibly well done and just kind of solid and, you know, kind of mature take on character advancement also in terms of, you know, the different tones of the game and, you know, the tones of the various characters and stuff like that.
Hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the first one is very much kind of like silent protagonist, so that it was just kind of generic in that way. And then, you know, two went probably a little too far into the emo anti-hero kind of space. And then the third one came around with a balanced.
So it followed the Prince of Persia trajectory.
Yeah.
See, but I feel like it, even, you know, whereas Prince of Persia kind of like stumbled headlong through that thing, like it seemed very, I don't know if it was, but very, very intentional to where like, you know, the first game was almost, you know, a Disney movie. The second one was just like the poster child for gritty remakes. And then the third one was just like, hey, we can have balance between these two ideas.
Yeah. And I mean, that wasn't just with the one character. That one of the things I have great affection for the Jack games for is that it is a huge stable of likable and characters that you care about. So.
Yeah. Let's do a quick compare and contrast, and I want to make sure that we honor the time commitment that we have for this section.
Sure.
But you know, Jack kind of petered out as Naughty Dog moved on to do different things, whereas kind of Ratchet and Clank moved on into the PlayStation 3 era and kind of, I don't know, like to me, I heard less about it through like Tools of Destruction, Quest for Booty, Crack in Time, Into the Nexus, all those. Mm-hmm. Call those off the top of my head. Not really. I'm looking at Wikipedia. And so do you think that like, because Jack was kind of constrained to just those, you know, just the PS2, except for Daxter, which was the PSP, but also came out on PS2. So it still kind of counts.
And Jack X Combat Racing. Hello. Which I will vouch for as a good game.
You have before. I am sure you would do that. but you know, does that kind of speak to it? Like, just did they, because they knew when to quit, did that make sure they always stayed fresh? Because that's a question that came up. you know, does it have to be still running to be considered still fresh?
Yeah, they kind of, they said their piece and then they sat down.
Yeah, they Costanza'd it. They jerk-stored it.
Sure, yeah. But in Ratchet and Clank, I mean, I have a lot of affection for the All for One game,
mm-hmm.
In that series, which is a great, great multiplayer experience, great couch co-op. Other than that, everything else was kind of mental Teflon for me. It just, it yeah. doesn't stick. And I own a couple of those games.
Mm-hmm.
And I even think about, like, they had Full Frontal Assault,
yep.
which was like a MOBA-ish type of game.
That's weird, right?
And that, I have no idea where that one went.
Huh.
Yeah, so it just, that, yeah, it kind of, it ran long enough to stumble
yeah.
And fall, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Quark can only, you know, comically betray you, except not really so many times.
Well, you know, it just proves the statement. You either, you know, die soon enough that you're still a good series, or you live long enough to become a bad one.
Yeah.
Hmm. Except for all those ones that our listeners wrote in about. And if you wanted to listen and respond to any of those, you can check out our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, where those prompts go up every Tuesday. We are considering some changes to the multiplayer format. You'll notice if you look here that we didn't get to everybody's responses because of the time limit that I put in place. There are just way too many people responding. So we're going to try and do our best to kind of surface some great stuff and still keep this listener interaction portion here, because so much of our networks, you know, if you consider this to be success, is because of your guys' participation. We're so grateful for it, but we want to do it in a way that really honors everybody. So watch for changes to that in the future. I don't know if it'll be next week or the week after that, but keep that in mind. Is there anything that I forgot about for the multiplayer?
Well, I also learned today that a lot of listeners like read through the comments on their own before listening to the episode. So
yes.
Even for the people who didn't get their voice read on air, your voice was heard.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, this one of those things, I hate it because this is such a generic thing to say, but I really, really mean it. Like, we read through these and I love hearing them. Like, they make my day incredibly better.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm. And that's writ large across the entire network. We just love you guys and girls. Like, it's all great.
Sorry.
Why'd you laugh? Because I hastily added "and girls."
Yeah. Sorry. I don't know
yeah,
why
it's
that.
Kind of like last episode when we were talking about what media we've crossed. Nobody mentioned art, even though I'm an artist. Oh, thanks. Kick in the nuts. Oh, wait, I don't have nuts. Damn.
Okay. Sorry.
Whip.
Punch in the boob?
Yes.
Well, we're going to have to move on from this as quick as possible.
The Grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. I forget who wasn't here last time. Was it you, David?
David,
okay.
I was not.
Okay, David, go ahead and lead us in.
Sure. Well, other than something that I think I'm going to have to, you know, share three ways with people, I've mainly been playing a lot of Dying Light. So according to the in-game, you know, percentage tracker, I'm 75% of the way through the game. But it seems to be going pretty quickly, so I'm hoping to finish up soon and move on to getting on to Mario Maker in time. But so far I'm pretty much enjoying it. It's kind of weird because it's very blatantly Dead Island 2.
Okay.
Like the plot is exactly the same as the original Dead Island. And you know, it's I don't know, it's weird, but the story actually kind of works.
Hmm. And that was your main complaint about the mainline Dead Island series, right? That and the characters not being likable.
Right, the characters not being likable, and they're just not being story. I mean, sorry, I'm not going to get into why I don't like Dead Island, but...
yeah, we've been there before.
Yeah, just the story and the way they told it didn't work. This game, I think, is kind of interesting, though, from that. It seems like there have been a number of games recently. The big ones I think of are... the most recent Far Cry and then Watch Dogs. Far Cry I've played, Watch Dogs I haven't, where kind of the consensus review has just been, you know, the story's maybe all right, but the main character is just incredibly boring. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's definitely the case in Far Cry, where your character just has zero personality. And I think it's kind of interesting in this one because the storyline is incredibly, incredibly generic, I guess, would be the closest thing. By me more to, like, I guess rote mm-hmm. would kind of be the best thing. Like, if you have any exposure to modern movies...
Yeah.
You know, like kind of the corpus of movies. Like, if you've seen more than, say, three 90s era, maybe 80s era and 90s era Disney movies,
mm-hmm.
you know exactly what's going to happen in the storyline.
Mm. So, like, it's just a pile of tropes as opposed to an actual.
Yeah, I mean, it straight up is the like kind of what I said going in. It's the, you know, person joins team with, you know, intent to betray them, realizes team is awesome, but it's too late, finds way to redeem itself. Like, it is straight up time for time that. And it's just things where, like, fairly routinely, you know, characters would be like, oh yeah, no, you go on ahead. I'll just stay here and, like, hold this place against the zombies. But first, let me tell you about my emotions and how I feel about things. I'm sure I'll be all right. Like, it's just the whole thing is just incredibly, incredibly predictable.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked. And even the main character, in a lot of ways, arguably is not, strictly speaking, is not a likable guy. But it kind of works simply because kind of, he actually has a personality. Yeah, I feel like, comparing this to, the Fallout 4, I feel like, Calcutron just yelling emote, emote.
Mm. So is this helped by the fact that they actually give you a main character as opposed to having you pick from one of four?
I think that could be definitely part of it. Although, yeah, I think that's probably the case, at least practically. Although I would say, other than just it being maybe a little bit relevant that your character is apparently some sort of, like, special forces mercenary, which explains why he can do all these things, like, who he is isn't all that relevant to the storyline. You know, he doesn't have, like, a history he draws on or anything like that. But mm-hmm. I do feel like the fact that there is at least some main character that they've committed to probably helps. So, overall, I'm really enjoying it. There are a couple of things that are kind of bad. The lockpicking system just is way too sensitive for what the controller can actually do, which is just kind of, a pretty piffling, complaint. I would say the boss fights are pretty horrible. For example, one of the first ones does the generic, like, enemy charges at you, you jump out of the way and they hit a wall and you attack them thing.
Hmm.
Except that the enemy can turn corners while charging.
We call that playing Toro.
Right, except that that tends not to work when the enemy can, you know, you dodge out of the way and the enemy turns and hits you.
Yeah, usually you have to depend on them running in a straight line.
Yeah, yeah, that tends to be an issue. And it's a thing where you lose experience points every time you die. And in the grand scheme of things, it probably doesn't matter that much. But it's just annoying where most of the boss fights, I'll die like 10 to 15 times in a row until I figure out, you know, how to abuse the AI or, you know, abuse whatever to beat them.
So does that wipe out the experience you would gain from beating the boss?
Yes. On the other hand, going out at night and surviving, which depending on how cheap you want to be, can just be as much as like finding an isolated place of geometry and sitting there, will generally give you about the same amount of experience as maybe about half as much experience as the main story quest. So you can get around it, but that's, you know, kind of a thing. So yeah. The only other thing I'd say that's kind of cool that I kind of like is in kind of the you know, relatively recent, you know, discussions of like depiction of women in games. I feel like Jade, who's kind of your the main other character that matters in the story, yeah, is a very overtly strong, compelling character,
mm-hmm,
and that that's kind of nice. She has what. One of my favorite fight scenes in any game I've played. It's just all around a badass. So that's pretty cool too.
Nice. Any other thoughts on Dying Light before you talk about? I guess you guys are going to kind of gang the Guild Wars 2 talk.
Yes,
we're gonna get sure. In the guild party up and
I suppose, yes. And I'll just be over here, I guess.
I think that's about it. I'm macheting all the things, so.
even other machetes.
Yes, yeah. Even the machete. No, I'm combining and crafting machetes into machetes to make super machetes.
As you do. Yeah, so tell me the developments in Guild Wars 2.
Well, I will just say one thing, and then I'll turn it loose for mostly Dennis to say his thoughts since he's new.
Fresh eyes.
Well, I'd seen the post, the announcement about it, but I wasn't going to comment on it until Dennis tweeted about it to me. But Guild Wars 2 now has a free-to-play option. It has some limitations to it that you do not have if you buy the full game. You can only have two characters. You have to be level 35, I think, to get into the hub city of Lion's Arch. And you have limitations and restrictions on what you can do insofar as the in-game economy. So, you know, the new free-to-play players don't wreck it.
Yeah.
But what it has enabled is for everybody in the world to play as much as they want. You know, you can go through the whole game. There isn't a level cap. There isn't a restriction on what areas other than, of course, like, you know, they do have an expansion coming out. So, like, they're trying to just generate interest in the game for the Heart of Thorns expansion that's coming out in October. They're going to be releasing a new class, that kind of thing. And so, after Dennis tweeted about it, I tweeted, you know, kind of generally to people who were, you know, followers, and then I posted a mention about it in the Slack channel, the co-op channel, and then, bam, all these people started signing up for Guild Wars 2. And so I was like, okay, well, if you guys are going to jump in, I'll go ahead and make a guild. So we are the Duck Fed. Listeners who play Guild Wars 2 or decide they want to try it because it is now free, you can most certainly message me. My character name is Jala Silverleaf, so you can message me or tweet me at Jalachan. Let me know your contact info. I can get you in the guild and we're good to go. And I'll from there, I'll just leave it alone. Dennis, talk about your new experiences.
Yeah. So, and you guys will have to tell me what's new for Guild Wars 2 versus what's, you know, the same from 1 or any of that stuff. But the two things that stood out most to me in Guild Wars 2 kind of eschewed the normal MMO tropes that I would have expected. The first one comes from questing structure. So instead of really, I mean, there are to some extent, there is a quest line for your character. But everything else in the world, instead of having to like find a quest giver and make sure everyone in your party has the same quest and like it all, you know, lined up from a you know, housekeeping standpoint, you just get together anywhere in the world that you want and interesting stuff will happen around you. And every so often, just a big orange circle will show up on your map saying, hey, something interesting is happening here. And you and anyone else who's interested can run over and check it out and try to help, which is really, really cool because it makes it easy to play with other people. So mm-hmm. Again, I haven't dipped into an MMO for, God, probably close to half a decade. But that was really, really nice and made it feel really friendly to a group of people playing together. So the downtime just trying to organize and get people all to the same place and with the same quest is completely gone. And I really appreciated that. The other thing that I really liked was that instead of your traditional skill trees where, you know, typically I'm the type of person who needs to spend 4 hours researching skill trees and endgame and planning out my character before I even start. This one is very dependent on your weapons. So you kind of choose a generic class and all that stuff. But really, it's the weapon that you're carrying that determines, actions are available to you in your play style, essentially. So if you decide you don't like whatever kind of decisions you've made, it's as easily changed as changing your weapon, which is really mm-hmm. appreciated. That's particularly true with the way I'm building my engineer class, because you do still get hero points, which you can spend on kind of skills and unique abilities. But I'm upgrading kind of this tree of kit skills, I'll call it. And I'm not sure what it's officially called in the game, but essentially I have all these different packs. And, you know, I've got my basic weapons. But then if I turn on my healing pack, I suddenly become a healer and have all these healing options available to me. If I turn on my flamethrower pack, I suddenly become this like close quarters specialist that's just wiping people out with flames. And that level of versatility on top of, you know, just needing your weapon to change your actions is really, really good. It feels really nice. And even just in the span of one combat, you know, I start out using my ranged weapons and then I jump over to my flamethrower as I close in. And then I see, oh, so-and-so from my party could use some healing. So I turn that on and it just all feels very dynamic and light, I guess is what I would call it.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but because I play an elementalist, I am a caster class and I can move and use magic at the same time. I can cast spells mm-hmm. and move around. And that being able to dodge, being able to, you know, like constantly be on the move throughout the entire game, you know, since one of my big shticks is that I love mobility, the fact that I am mm-hmm. able to move and, you know, do all this stuff makes a big difference to me. And that makes it fresh for me because I can jump, I can dodge, I can, you know, move around as I'm casting stuff. You know, I can cast stuff while I'm running. So that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And also, they don't have a healer class. Everybody has healing skills. And the whole concept is so that way, you know, everybody can be independently capable of running through areas without, you know, being like, oh, I don't have a tank, I don't have a healer, blah, blah, blah. You know, so trying to do away with that kind of, you know, age-old party structure, at least to a certain extent. So, sorry, yeah. Continue.
No, I think that's a great kind of summation of it is Guild Wars 2 is just an MMO that's light on its feet. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that, especially as someone who doesn't have the type of time that you would traditionally associate with sure. with investing in an MMO. That said, as I did start to get into my hero, my hero's personal story, it did start to feel very, very traditionally MMO structured. Like, you know, you run to a place and you talk to a person, then you run to another place and you enter an instance. You fight a couple of people in that instance and then you run back to the original place. And I just, you know, I don't care about the game's story. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to get invested there. And it's, you know, you're doing very generic MMO things in the main quest for your character. So I could see myself just having way more fun focusing almost entirely on the random world events and party stuff.
And definitely the personal story, in my opinion, is probably their weakest link. It starts out being very diverse depending upon the way you answer the questions when you first build your character, and depending upon your race and all that other stuff and what class you are, it changes up a little bit about the story. But then after a certain point, all of those stories merge together and they're all the exact same story. And so later on, when you get to a high enough level, you will eventually get to where I'm at in my personal story at level 70. Like I'm a level 80, but I never got to beat the level 70 personal story. So whenever there's enough people that level, I can finish it up. So, you know, you'll eventually get to the same spot I'm at, and all of our stories will merge. And what that really does, at least in my opinion, is it just basically sets up the world, like the situation in the world. Some of the later missions are actually really cool. Like the main concept in here is that there is this undead kingdom of Or, where there is a giant dragon that has resurrected all of these people from the sunken kingdom. And there is a point in the personal story later on where you actually go into Or. And it's neat. It is really neat. So there are parts that are cool, but it's not every part of it. There's a lot of it that I think is where it falls short. It's kind of catering a little bit too much to that same normal MMO, you know, storyline thing. Although the, you know, dynamics of the gameplay itself as you're running around the world are really fun. And things that we haven't had a chance to do yet are dungeons, because you have to be at least level 30 to get into a dungeon, or the Fractals of the Mist, which is another kind of dungeon type thing, but it's randomized rather than the storyline dungeons. There's those. I've only run a few people through jumping puzzles, but this game has jumping puzzles too. There's platforming. And so there's those different areas. There's also zone bosses, where you have a boss that is huge that's related to the storyline in some way. And those bosses are so giant that everybody in the zone has to come and try to fight it. And they actually have boss timers on the internet to tell you what boss is going to be up when, because these are events that come up like once a week or something like that, that these guys show up. So those are really a lot of fun to do too. So those are things that we haven't had chance to do yet, but we've just started playing around.
Sure. So to give you an idea, one of the fractal dungeons, just arbitrarily you become a dolphin, and the entire quote unquote dungeon is like in the ocean, and you're like, I don't know, dodging jellyfish and crap.
It's Echo the Dolphin, yeah.
Yeah, it's yeah.
That's funny.
So I know, I guess, you know, just to give some of my thoughts. I think the one of the big things the game does really well is epicness, and you know, it's just this, it's an ultra you know, I guess epicness and scale. It's an, you know, extremely high magic setting, and you know, it uses that to justify just, you know, situations where, like, the Asura basically live in a vast floating Mayan-inspired Rubik's Cube.
With golems and things
like
that.
With golems. They are basically Stitch. You know, there's a cow cannon in one of the
Catapult,
I'm sorry.
I have introduced some of our guildies to the catapult. You can get flung in that thing, by the way. You can actually get into it.
Exactly. Or like for Christmas, one of the zones is just like you travel into this vast snow globe that has this entire Christmas city in it, and it's, you know, completely instance, and you're just running around fighting toys. Like they go real big on just the, you know, the size of everything, and just, yeah, so that's really cool. The other thing I'd say is that I really like is it's kind of funny in a lot of ways, despite being the most, you know, what one of the maybe the most like modern and streamlined and user-friendly MMOs there is. The gameplay reminds me a lot of classic EverQuest. And I think part of that is because, you know, a lot of, at least to me, a lot of the feel of the original EverQuest was the fact that, you know, there's virtually no hand-holding, and it was, you know, very much designed to be just this, you know, simulation of a world as opposed to being, you know, kind of hand-holding your way through a story.
As opposed to actually being something that is fun to play.
You know. Yeah. But, like, yeah. Because of that, like, a lot of its feel revolved around the fact that it was just, you know, completely open and you could run off doing whatever shenanigans you wanted. And I feel like, ironically enough, you know, kind of rolling around from the other side, because because Guild Wars 2 is so incredibly streamlined and, you know, they put so little restrictions in your way, it ends up being this quite similar thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just in terms of, like, you know, there are no level caps on anything. So, you know, we did a couple nights ago, and I'm sorry to the viewers who joined us for some of these shenanigans. We did things where we would just decide to, like, go adventuring through high-level zones to get to some jumping puzzle we wanted to do.
Huh.
Or,
seeking out jumping puzzles.
Yep, there's lots of them, and they're super fun. But anyway.
Huh. Yeah.
With rewards. Yeah. Really good rewards at the end, too, by the way. But
yeah, or just you know, the amount you just travel and, you know, getting lost, and I don't know. To me, it brings back a lot of the feeling of scale and epicness that I haven't felt in a MMO since EverQuest.
One thing that I really like about Guild Wars 2 is the fact that, and this is something that carries over from the original game, the environments are very rich and beautiful to look at, more so than any other MMO I've wandered around in. And not only that, but every single one of the racial cities, like the Asura Lands and the Char and the Silvari, are very, very different. So you go into the Silvari Land and it's this crazy, you know, overgrown garden of magic and stuff. And then you go to Asura Land and then you've got, you know, the tech Magitek stuff and the golems and things like that. And then you go to Char Lands and you see Mad Max, steampunky giant tanks and stuff like that just everywhere, and all kinds of neato, interesting stuff. And then, you know, the human city is more traditional looking, and actually humans in this game are very faith driven and they're also dying out, which makes them actually kind of interesting to play because they're on the way out of the door and their gods have left them and they are just struggling to find meaning at this point because they're almost dead. And so this makes them kind of interesting as well. Insofar as this is the first game that I actually like playing a human in. Usually humans are pretty boring, but in this one they're neat in their own unique way. So overall, I like the fact that the different areas have such vastly different feelings. You know, you go through Nornland and it's winter wonderland, Norse/Native American type, you know, place. And then suddenly you're in Charland and it's completely different. And that in and of itself is interesting to me because the world seems, I guess, more richly developed than I've seen in a while. And at least insofar as I'm concerned, it's more interesting than a lot of environments that I've come across in games in recent times. So but I do want to give out some shout outs about some of the stuff that we've done in the guild.
Yes.
So one thing that we've been doing, like I said before, jumping puzzles. I've done jumping puzzles with Chase, Robin, Sam, David, Dennis, and Tama at different times. One of the jumping puzzles that, David, unfortunately, you were not a part of was there's one that's basically an ode to Indiana Jones. It is in one of the starter areas, actually the char area. And there's like fire traps and spike traps and rough falling rocks and all different kinds of stuff. And it's actually a really tough one. And, you know, we did that one, and that was actually the first one we did, and it was probably the hardest one. But we also, Chase, Robin, Tama, and I went and fought a champion level area boss while in an area that was higher than any of their level, and we beat it along with help from other people in the area, but we still beat it and got a really good reward. So they've been racking up some good gear and stuff like that, and so a lot of which they can't use yet because they're not high enough level, but you know, they'll get there.
Most
eventually.
Of it for me has been like, your character just can't use this.
Mm. No, yeah, like you do get that, but that's the advantage of being in a guild where you can swap equipment. Like, as soon as I can build it, once we acquire enough influence, which is gained by partying with people in your guild, logging in, that kind of thing.
Like drinking?
Yeah, totally. Like, there are areas of the game where there are drinking parties, and you can totally just go there. In the original Guild Wars, you could drink so much that you got sick, and then the screen went all wobbly, and then started random, like your character randomly wandered around and puked and stuff.
I think I've said this, but the drunkenness mechanic from the original EverQuest is one of the things I miss most.
Yep. That's great.
But once I get enough influence, I'll be able to open up a guild bank, which means that all of that stuff you can't use, you can dump in there, and then everybody can dump their stuff in there, and we can swap around equipment so you can get something that's more usable for your profession or whatever you want. So,
sure. Kind of on a similar note, we were about to, or we actually might have since now, finished researching to get a guild emblem, right?
That should have been up about an hour ago, I think, by the timer.
Right. So I guess we should probably, say, we're gonna need some input from people on what we should do as the emblem. There are unfortunately no overt ducks. However, there are a number of entertaining
covert ducks.
Of entertainingly epic birds that I feel like would be hilarious. Or there's also a moa head, which moas are, in this game, are basically chocobos.
They're chocobos.
Like, it's to the point where I find it hilarious, and I'm assuming this isn't intentional. If you play as a hunter or a ranger, effectively, you can tame every color of chocobo except yellow.
Yeah.
Or rather, every color of moa except yellow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh. So, if people wanted to join this, how would they go about doing it?
I said that right at the top. You can message me in-game. You can actually shoot me a mail. You can actually send messages in-game, like email. You can send me an email. If I'm online, you can whisper me. If not, you can get on Twitter at Jolichon and shoot me a message there. In-game name is Jala Silverleaf, and we are the Duck Fed.
Nice.
Not to mean the the Duck Federal Reserve. That's completely different. If that was true, we wouldn't need influence.
Patreon or influence. Or to kill
them. Yes, it is the economy of ducks. Huh. So we dedicated a lot of time to Guild Wars 2. I'm going to kind of do like a ask for a speed round of anything else we've been playing, starting with you, Dennis.
Yeah, more Heroes of the Storm. I played in a party for the first time, so joined up with Jonathan. And I think what happens is if you're playing in a party, that bumps you up to playing, like it groups you with other people who are playing in parties, which means that we just got destroyed in a way that I've had moderate success with solo play. But I think it just, it's like, oh, you work as a team, do you? Well, here's other people who do that. And it was not good. So it was still a lot of fun to play, even though we lost four times in a row, which that's a pretty good compliment for the game. But yeah, it's almost to the level where I'd kind of think twice before I grouped up again, just because I'm so intimidated. So I can't prove that's what it does, but it seemed that way.
It would make some sense, right? Like, yeah, that could just be like a confirmation bias or availability heuristic, but
yeah. So I need a mode that's like, hey, you're in a party, but you really have no idea what the hell you're doing.
Yeah.
Can I group with people, or, you know, can I play against other people like that?
Yep. What can you not play against the computer?
You can play against AI opponents, but where's the fun in that?
Well, in MOBAs, that is, I don't want to lose every single game mode. that's fairly par for the course, or at least from what I've seen.
And I think it does allow you to level up, or at least track your stats when you're playing versus the computer. So it's not too far out of the realm of possibility. But yeah, that's the only other thing I've been playing.
Cool. Yeah, I'm happy that you're not falling completely down that hole, although the fact that you are jumping into an MMO is also concerning.
Yeah, this is a lot of things that I just thought were beyond gaming-wise that are popping up. So,
Jella, how about you? Any miscellaneous errata?
Usually. In this case, I have also been playing a little bit of a game called Back to Bed. It is on iOS, Android, PS3, PS4, and also the Vita. It is a puzzle game that is based on / inspired by the works of Escher, Magritte, and Dali. So what this is about is basically you are a guy who is a sleepwalker named Bob. And in the game, you play Sub-Bob, which is the subconscious of Bob. And Bob is sleepwalking through this crazy Escher level, and you have to put stuff in his path and keep him from falling off the edge, and you have to, like, guide him back to his bed. So that's the premise of the game, and it's got, you know, lots of puzzly elements because he always turns clockwise, and so you have to figure out how to adjust everything, and you also you have a time element because he's constantly walking and you can't stop him from walking or turning around, because as soon as he bumps into something, he moves and starts walking in another direction. So it can be pretty tricky. And there's also a nightmare mode if you want to try super hard level. But, you know, it's just this fun, interesting hand-drawn game that has been kind of like neat. And because, you know, again, I'm a painter, I was kind of attracted to it at first glance because of the art aspect. So
yeah, for anybody who's curious about this, this looks fantastic. It appears to be like a if Monument Valley was a Lemmings game.
Nice.
This looks great.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. You're just playing that on Steam?
I'm actually playing that on my phone because I like having something like that I can play on my phone at all times.
Nice.
And, you know, so.
Yeah. Cool. So I'm going to end this ignominiously. I believe that is how you say that. It's not how you say that. So I wanted to talk about the first hour or so of Metal Gear Solid 5. However, work decided to fuck itself sideways, so I was not able to do that. It is currently running on the screen behind me, and I assure you that me being here is an act of love. aside from finishing Paper Mario for Watch Out for Fireballs, which is great, and anybody who has the ability to play it should do so, I really have just been playing some Pac-Man 256 in bed.
Wait, they're already up to the 256th in the series?
It's not really that out of it's within the realm of possibility. No, this is Pac-Man 256, referring to, I think, the kill screen of Pac-Man. This is a free-to-play iOS version of Pac-Man that is made by the developers of Crossy Road. And this is kind of taking, what if Pac-Man was an endless runner, but you were still controlling it in a maze-like fashion? And you were motivated to move forward through this maze by an ever encroaching version of the kill screen with its various digits and such behind you, but you still had ghosts, and also you had the ability to kind of get power ups. You know, like lasers and ghost freezing and such, and also the power pills that are scattered around.
Wait, did you say lasers?
Yeah, lasers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, no, just kind of like, oh, if anything is in front of you as you're going, well, this is active, then it will die. And that's pretty cool. Even though that is, it's like a slightly different, but like enough to be strategically similar to the power pill, just because it does rely on line of sight as opposed to just like being able to like round a corner immediately into something. And it's pretty fun. Like it controls, I don't know, like I never would have thought that like touchscreen controls would have been good for Frogger, but Cross Your Road proved that wrong. And it proves to be really good for Pac-Man. And they also kind of incorporate some of the different ghost behaviors for Miss Pac-Man into this. So it's pretty predictable what they're going to do, which is nice. And they throw different patterns of ghosts and stuff at you. The music is fantastic too. And this stands in stark contrast to Triple Triad insofar as the free-to-play stuff does not feel gross. You get like credits and coins that let you continue after you die, like once and only once, to like boost your max score. And you can pay for those. And all of the power-ups, they tend to like withhold the ones that you like to use from them. But there's an option to be like, yeah, make it so that all power-ups act normal. And that is just you pay them for the game, which is like $5.
Sure.
But I haven't run up against that. So, but yeah, like it continues the like, oh, Cross Your Road, those guys know how to do free to play really, really well. And this is Pac-Man, and it uses that aesthetic really, really well. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, that's going to be something I'll be downloading.
Cool. Yeah.
How long are you playing it at a time?
Like an individual round lasts about like 5 minutes for me.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So you have to pay attention to it. You know, the better you are, the longer it's going to last. So I don't know if that is accurate for everybody, but that's about where I'm at. But yeah, I'll play a couple rounds before I go to bed.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah. Pac-Man 256. Do you all want to button it up?
Buttons.
Let us.
Thank you so much for listening to episode number 119 of The Level. We super appreciate everybody participating and listening. Gosh, you know, we talk a lot about the Slack channel, and you know, I feel like we're leaving people out if they're not getting into that, but that is just reminding me of kind of just how awesome this community is as a whole. I am super grateful every day that this is like a thing, and you guys are not just paying attention, but like helping each other out and playing games with each other. And I don't know, just being great.
Yeah.
We loves you.
We do. Like it sounds trite, you know, but, it's wonderful to know that you're out there. And, you know, a couple years ago, I never would have believed that it would have been like this, but here we are.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before you continue, what about the rest of those codes? Do you want to mention them?
Yes, go ahead. I'm going to let you do this because I have done poorly.
Okay, so I still have some Leviathan Last Day of the Decade codes, and I know this was originally set up just for Slackers, but since we still have some codes left, I'm going to open that up to anybody else who wants to do this. So listeners, even if you are not part of Slack, if you are interested in playing Leviathan Last Day of the Decade, message me on Twitter and say, what's a good saying? Somebody give me a pun or something. You terrible people.
The Live in Levito Leviathan was so good, I don't know if we can top it.
Yeah. Leap in Leviathans.
Okay, there you go. Leap in Leviathans. Tweet me. Leap in Leviathans at Jalachan on Twitter.
Yeah. Do that, please. I'm trying to think of anything else other than the usual things. It's been a minute since we've gotten a review, on iTunes. That is usually helpful. I know we say that most times. However, you know, it actually does help people find us every time we get a rating or review. It tends to put us on a chart for just a second. And if we could keep that chain going, more people would find this. But yeah, I just kind of want to entreat you to keep on listening, keep on participating, and most of all, we're just so happy you're here. So I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I have been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I've been David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
And I am always Jolichan.
Yes, and until next time, stick around to hear us deliberate about the titles.
I like that until next time has just become perfunctory to like stick around yes. and wait.
Well, you know, until next time you hear our voices.
Yeah.
Okay, so here we go. I've got five possibilities, and after I read these, I want you all to offer any others that you have kept track of over the time. So, The Shipping of the Many. Have You Met Me? Often Shocked, comma, Never Surprised. Regression to Competence. An Embarrassment of Mario's.
I also have An Act of Love.
Yeah, that's right. I've been trying to brainstorm like what was the way we could do that. I like An Embarrassment of Mario's though.
I'll always have a soft spot for Often Shocked, Never Surprised, but I'll leave it up for anyone.
I like An Act of Love, actually, because that does describe how I feel right now as Metal Gear Solid 5 runs behind me.
Well, and not only that, but then too, you could also take it in the more positive other route where you're like, oh, but also we lurbs our listeners.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So let's do that.
Okay.
Can we dump the titles into Slack like we did last time? I found that all.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun because people were voting on it. That was yeah. They were voting.
I'll do that
and
now.
And Cole is like, this is not a democracy.
Nobody would have guessed that it was Old Man Orgasms. Nobody expects Old Man Orgasms.
Everybody should have guessed that it was Old Man Orgasms.
Everybody like wanted to, but it was way too raunchy for them.
Nobody wanted to be the first one to say that it was that. The Emperor is wearing no clothes, people.
Yeah, and he's just coming furiously.
Oh my.